Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Chris Roper is the former editor-in-chief of The Mail and Guardian. He's joining us on the line. Chris, thanks for doing that. So, of course, as Jews, we are enormously sensitive to anybody, to any Holocaust denial, to anybody rewriting history in a way that that validates or justifies anything during the Holocaust. As a result of that, we often react very, very strongly. At the same time, we are, maybe not we, but in fact everybody, likes to end any argument around racism or anti-Semitism or any form of prejudice by going to the extreme, which is the genocide and of Jews. So it's a very, very difficult situation, because if everything is the Holocaust, then nothing is the Holocaust. And if anybody says anything around this, we are very, very sensitive to it. Take us through your process of investigating this story, because I think it's important on a number of levels. One is about the Holocaust and Jews and how it was discussed, but the other talks to journalism and how we investigate and report stories.
Yes, I mean, let me first be clear, quote my favorite religious intellectual, Reza Aslan.
Right.
Let me be clear. I'm not an expert on Holocaust denialism, and I'm certainly not a political scientist. So my article was about journalism, about how badly journalism handled this affair. If you want to read something that's really by somebody who actually knows what they're talking about, I recommend Stephen Robbins' article on the Daily Maverick this morning, which delves into the kind of the frailties of Lishaba's arguments from the academic sense.
Okay.
But from my perspective, from the column I wrote, when the story came out in Sunday Times and on Times Live, the journalists quite openly said they'd watched a 12-second clip, and now they were writing headlines like, UCT lecturer says Hitler committed no crime, or really bad one, which was something like Hitler committed no crime. Fury after UCT lecturer hails Nazi madman. Now, you could absolutely attack Lishaba's argument on many, many grounds, and many people have, but you cannot just selectively grab a quote out of something which is a lot more nuanced. So I actually watched the 55-minute video, and, when you watch it, it's a much more nuanced argument. The argument is that for white people in the 30s, and specifically for political scientists, genocide of black people wasn't considered a crime, and therefore genocide wasn't committed a crime. So when Hitler committed this crime, political scientists had to then upgrade their frame of reference and say, actually, because now it's white on white violence, we now have to acknowledge the fact of genocides. Mm. So that's really his argument. And of course, there are loads of things you can say are wrong with that argument.
Absolutely.
But what you cannot say is that a person whose lecture and who says specifically the Holocaust was evil, the Holocaust was a crime, it's real, you cannot call him a Holocaust denialist.
Absolutely right. And yet everybody was very quick to do that. That's become, isn't that really where we've gone in our reporting, in our Twitter society, where we are looking at very, very small sound bites instead of, and condemning people or applauding them based on those very, very few characters?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think that, terms like Holocaust, Hitler have become over time, a way to toss little bombs of meaning into conversation, right? Mm. And people kind of just react to them in different ways. And that's kind of where journalism is at the moment. In some cases, there obviously are great journalists with journalism out there still, but the journalists who play in the field of Twitter breaking news, risk breaking journalism itself in a lot of ways, because they do have to buy into this kind of whole different time frame of how stories work. I mean, you just mentioned earlier that I'd been an editor at the Mail and Guardian, and one of the frustrations there was that we would spend weeks, months on a massive, massive breaking story. We would publish it on Friday morning, and I would tell the journalist, this story is going to be yours for about 8 minutes until News 24 has taken it and rewritten it and put it up on their website. So basically, you have 8 minutes to be the person who broke the story.
Amazing.
And this
Amazing.
Is the problem. That, I mean, there's so many great things that come with these problems, right?
Mm.
The first is access to massive audiences. The other one is that you cannot now just write a story that's addressed to one kind of audience, you know? So in America, you have the Fox News versus CNN. In South Africa, we are quite a lot luckier. Our journalism is a lot more nuanced because we are now cognizant as journalists that we're writing for multiple audiences at once. And that strengthens journalism.
Yeah, it is very true, because often I have this debate and I ask our listeners, is there one American publication that you feel is balanced? And it's very hard to even to find that, whereas in South Africa, you can find within many of our publications, there's different views and nuance. So I do think that we are blessed, but we are still falling into these traps. To a large extent, didn't the Adam Habib situation, isn't it something somewhat similar?
Yes, but you know, again, there I'm not going to comment too much because that I would be the person who watched the 12-second clip
on the video.
I think he knows enough to talk about it. But certainly, my gut instinct is that you're correct there. You know, I mean, there's a kind of a weird way in which we have to thank all the crazies in South Africa, you know, from all sides of the political spectrum and from the bottom of the cesspit, for keeping journalists honest in a way. So in the one sense, they're making journalists behave contrary to what the editorial code of ethics has demanded, editorial policy has demanded for good journalism. But on the other hand, they're making them very, very nervous and very conscious of what they write. So, yeah, for me, that's almost a good thing. I mean, there's a price to pay. Mm. You have to have people like Helen Zilla writing books about go anti-work or stay broke, whatever that is. So there's a price to pay, but absolutely, I think it's going to be good for journalism in the medium to long run.
But isn't the downside to this, and I find it enormously frustrating that, and I often call out whether it's an EWN or a News 24, and I write for News 24, but I still call them out on it, is you'll often have them just repeating sound bites from government ministers or whomever it is, but not interrogating anything beyond that, asking the questions, yeah, pushing to find out what's beneath that, because publications, the online publications, because of that need for speed, often can just become mouthpieces of various players rather than looking into the real story that exists beneath those statements.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you two answers to that, the negative and the positive. Mm. So the negative is just simply agree with you. You know, if you have a news industry that's predicated upon just churning out sound bites, you're in trouble. But the positive side is that, you know, there's a lot to be said for getting all that information out there. And there's a lot to be said for respecting your reader. So in my kind of, today I've chosen to have a rosy view of the world. My rosy view of the world today, the fact that audiences are being trained to not trust is a good thing to me. That they mistrust as reputable, and in fact, I work on the Reuters trust barometer every year, my organization Code for Africa.
Right.
And it's amazing when you look at the trusted brands in South Africa, where they sit in people's heads. So the revolting Iqbal Survey brands, like the Star, are actually ahead of the Daily Maverick for people, which is something that's hard to understand. And until you think, well, it's because the Star's been around for like, whatever, 100 plus years. The Daily Maverick is a new upstart, relatively speaking. So it's quite a positive thing that people are learning to mistrust news brands, because if they learn to mistrust the Star, unfortunately, they're also learning to mistrust Daily Maverick. Perhaps it's unfortunate, but actually, no, it's fortunate, because nobody should trust the media. They shouldn't be trusting anybody. You should always be questioning.
Absolutely.
I think the long-term result's going to be positive.
I think that's right. And our job in all of this, I guess, is to hold publications responsible so that they hold government and they hold themselves responsible as well, and accountable rather than responsible is rather.
I think active citizenry in all departments, we're doomed. And I think we have a very active citizenry, sometimes too active in terms of lobbing a brick, other times not active enough in terms of just sitting back and being a couch warrior.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a very active citizenry. I think that's something we can be proud of.
Absolutely right. Chris Roper, we do need to leave it there. Chris was the former editor-in-chief of the Mail and Guardian. Well done for that article. It wasn't necessarily something that was easy to read, especially because of the nuance of the argument, but I think it was so, so vital. And well done to you for playing that role.